Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The Lindsey Clancy trial is reaching its climax. A hung jury appears to be increasingly likely. A mistrial would mean the charges remain, the evidence remains, and the woman at the center of all of it is still sitting at Tewksbury Hospital waiting to find out what the Commonwealth of Massachusetts plans to do. It looks like nobody is going to get a clear verdict from this trial if that's where it goes. Not the public, not the families, not Lindsey Clancy herself. Today, we're joined by defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis to walk us through the potential road ahead if a mistrial is in fact declared, how quickly we'd know if there's a second trial, whether the defense has options nobody's talking about, and what a plea deal even looks like in a case where the whole argument is that the defendant wasn't responsible for what she did. Eric, if a mistrial is officially declared and the jury is sent home, what happens to Lindsey Clancy? Is it true? Does she just go back to Tewksbury and they figure out what happens next, or until the next hearing or trial? What are the possibilities there? I guess how quick does a DA decide we're going to try this again, go back to the hospital, or you're free?
Sure. So I don't think it's going to be a you're free outcome. I think what's going to happen if there is a mistrial, there are a number of steps that are going to take place. First, the judge is, unless the prosecution has already made the decision as to whether or not to retry, the judge would probably set a hearing like a week after the mistrial. Say, hey, prosecutor, you got a week. Think about this. Are you going to seek a retrial or not? If a retrial is sought, then Lindsey Clancy throughout that week and throughout the pendency of the retrial would probably remain in custody. My understanding is that she's at some mental health facility, but under like law enforcement supervision. And so she could ask for a bond. She could absolutely ask for a bond, and Reddington could go to the judge and say, hey, look, this case, it shows how many weaknesses there are in this case. You know, they had all of this time. They couldn't bring it together. They couldn't get a conviction. Because of these weaknesses, you should have less concern about Lindsey Clancy. She is probably going to prevail in the second trial, is what Reddington would argue. Therefore, you should give her a bond. You should let her be out of custody. She's already gone through this crucible. That's what defense would argue. I think a judge would be hard-pressed to release Lindsey Clancy pending a new trial. Now, if no new trial is sought, then there is no case pending. And in that instance, Lindsey might be free.
But what about her care, I guess, is the question. She's already stated before this trial, you know, I want to be essentially in state care or in a mental hospital for the rest of my life. That's kind of where that sits. Let me ask you this from a strategic standpoint. If we do have a hung jury, yes, Reddington could come say, you know, and ask for bond that could get Lindsey out of Tewksbury. I don't know that Lindsey wants to be out of Tewksbury, or at least out of a environment where she is getting that sort of round the clock care. Right now it's state sanctioned, it's state paid for. If you're out of that, guess what? You better have the money to pay for that care for the rest of your life. And the optics, because if this does go to another trial and she's out on bond, half of the argument has been, look, she doesn't want to leave the mental hospital. if she left the mental hospital between trials, that kind of takes that argument away that actually does play in her favor. Wouldn't she be better off remaining in the psychiatric facility, at least through some sort of determination here in a legal sense, versus bonding out for a time being if we were to go to a second trial?
I think absolutely it would be in her best legal interest to be there, in part because it preserves that argument that, hey, she's doing everything she could. She's seeking all the treatment she can seek. Like, she's trying her darndest to get a grasp on this. It preserves that argument for defense later on. If she were released from the facility but wanted additional care, you can always seek to commit yourself. You can say, hey, I think I'm a danger to myself and others. State, help me. And sometimes you will be accepted into programs, sometimes not. So there are ways for her to remain in there if she wants to, but probably not forever unless that is the result of a legal proceeding.
Interesting.
And I'm looking up the stats on the probability of getting bail bond after this anyway, too. So stand by as it comes in.
Yeah. There's obviously, the jury is signaling deep divisions here. The judge read them the Tui Rodriguez charge, which essentially tells the jury that no future panel will hear better evidence than they did. Okay. I mean, neat. If I'm on the jury and I hear that, I'm like, yeah, no shit. And they're still struggling. I know this is how it's done there in Massachusetts, reading that charge out to them. Does it make a difference? Does that, hey guys, ain't gonna get better than this. Does it put weight on a jury to make a decision, or is it just like another no shit moment for the jury?
That is such a concern. It is the potential coercive effect from such an instruction. So let me give you an example. Let's say back there are 11 not guilty and one guilty. And this one guilty just firmly believes, hey, she is guilty. This is my determination as a juror after hearing everything. Well, if the jury then goes to the judge and says, hey, we're deadlocked. And the judge says, keep trying, go back. And then they come again and they say, hey, judge, we're still deadlocked. We tried. It's not changing. And the judge says, why don't you go back? You're going to have to finish this. The jury doesn't necessarily know that if they go back a third time, a mistrial is likely to be determined. Instead, maybe that one holdout who thinks they're guilty just says, how am I getting out of here? I'm not getting out of here unless I change my position. I could be here, who knows, for days, weeks on end. Yeah. I've already been here for weeks and weeks and weeks. I'm going to cave. I'm just going to change. I got to go on with my life. And that is a very real concern, I think, for both sides in terms of the possible course of effect of that instruction.
How do you avoid that? I mean, so help me understand what this and what's the thing that he invoked, the judge, is that tomb, the Tewksbury?
Tewksbury Rodriguez, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. So what exactly is that? And what are the consequences to the jurists at this point, if any?
Sure. So what that means, Robin, is that the jury goes and says we're deadlocked. The court says, hey, I get it, guys. This is tough. But no one is in a better position to decide this case. And what you should do is you should reconsider your views. You should be open-minded to other people's expression of their views. And you should not relinquish any strongly held beliefs if you firmly believe one thing or the other. So it's kind of just like, hey, keep thinking about it, bro. And, how helpful is that? And what effect could that have on jurors who, like I said, they're not advised that if they come back a third time deadlocked, it's likely a mistrial. They don't even know that could be the outcome. And so the jurors are probably back there thinking, they're not going to let me out of here unless somebody caves and I got to get on with my life. And that would be a perversion of the jury system in my mind.
And so that couldn't be used by Reddington, but I'm learning from you, Eric. So that could not be used from Reddington as a reasons for appeal unless there's evidence that it actually did influence one. In other words, as long as they came back and they did all agree, Reddington has no appeal. Unless through a podcast interview or something, one of the jurors says, yeah, when he came in the third time, I felt the pressure and I just wanted to get out of there. Is that then enough for a reason for appeal?
They would probably need some kind of statement from some juror, however limited, that said, hey, I changed my mind in part because of these, of the pressures that I felt associated with this instruction, associated with this process.
So I'll riff on that one deeper. Say there's a juror that is completely, or a couple, completely sick to death of being here, the stress, the time, the agony, the contentiousness, that says, hey, I'm going to end this right now by agreeing. And then in their mind, they said, and then I'm going to go public with it so they can retry and get my way.
That would be pretty thoughtful in terms of forward thinking and in terms of a plan. But yes, a juror could choose to do that and then sort of upend the whole thing. We've seen cases upended by juror statements after trials before.
Has that happened? Have you seen that happen intentionally?
I can't say that I have, but there's gazillions of trials, and I'm only aware of a very small percentage of them.
Couldn't truly be a strategy, because I mean, if there was an attorney that was seen being involved with trying to get a juror, let me ask you that, a juror after the fact, not influencing the juror during the process, but after the fact, you're the attorney for the client, and you happen to get, there's a juror that comes to you from the last trial and says, you know what, I think this is bullshit, I want to speak out about it, and I just went along with this because this was my plan all along. Does exactly what Robin just said, and you're the attorney for the other. What do you do with that information? Do you run with it? I mean, you're not the one who had this strategy. This juror decided to go rogue and try to take the law into their own hands and control the whole trajectory of this damn thing. I mean, does that just throw their credibility out, you know, immediately if they're doing that? Or what? I don't know. This seems like it could be a very common scenario, considering the way that the world is viewing true crime and the fervor that people have for it.
Juror misconduct is one of the most frequent grounds on which convictions are overturned. And so a juror has some rules that they have to base their decision on the evidence and not on some strategy, not on some personal payoff that I get to get out of here, not on some, you know, thought that, oh, I'm going to get some attention or whatever after this if I do this kind of weird thing. I think it would qualify as juror misconduct and would likely result in some kind of reverse.
God. Yeah. So their misconduct, their goal of it would, I mean, could there be charges for a juror that admits to doing something like that? I mean, are they really doing anything illegal? Other than just being
flexing Eric's
being
legal
a
brain,
hindrance
man.
To society.
Right. That's not always a crime. I've got some friends who are major hindrances. Yeah. They're free. But, you know, I think I can't think of any sort of criminal action. It wouldn't be tampering.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be tampering with a juror because it's yourself and you're not exerting influence over somebody else. I don't see a crime in that. I don't know.
I'm still looking up the last one. My AI is running slow on this because I'm asking all about these crazy questions about the juror intentionally undermining the process so they could go home finally, so they could actually reverse it the way they wanted. So it's actually coming in right now. So keep going, Tony.
Sorry. One more question. Are we going, if this jury does come back hung, do we find out the final count or does the judge decide if that information gets out?
I would be doubtful that the public would find out. Sometimes when there is a hung jury, both sides want to know what the count was. You know, if it was 11 not guilty, 1 guilty, that may cause a DA to not retry the case. Whereas if it was 11 guilty, 1 not guilty, that'd be a good grounds to retry it. So it's pretty common for the attorneys to learn the split if the judge permits it. Public, not so much.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so here's what I found out. Holdouts get worn down. They do this like we just described. What happens in those cases? Almost nothing, because once the verdict is taken and the poll is clean, courts will not let a juror undo it by saying, I caved or I plan to talk later. That is that's the no impeachment rule, internal pressure fatigue, wanting to go home. That stays inside the room. So it wouldn't work.
It happens, though.
They try.
Yeah.
Fascinating what ifs, aren't they?
It is. A lot of what ifs. That's the choose your own adventure version of the case.
Choose your own
today.
Ending, right?
All right. That'll wrap it up. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description. Be sure to check out Robin's masterclass. It is available now. The link is going to be in the description. Robin.
Yeah, it's masterclass.com/Robin Dreek. It's all about behavior assessment and becoming the people everyone trusts. So if you're interested, check it out. Thanks.
All right, check that out. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor. As always, thank you so much for being on and giving us your insight on Thursdays, as always. Until next time, for Eric, for Todd, and myself, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.